I'm Marco Werman, and you're with The World. Lagos, Nigeria is the largest city in sub-Saharan Africa. With more than 20 million people and unchecked sprawl, Lagos qualifies as a megacity. Nigeria itself has the biggest economy in Africa, but it's a place with vast disparities in income and access to services. You see that in Lagos, where millions of poor people live in informal settlements that are considered illegal by the authorities. They live under constant threat of eviction. And they have to fend for themselves when it comes to getting services like water, electricity, or even policing the streets. Rupa Goganeni reports.
The first place I visit in Lagos is Orin Sumbare, one of hundreds of informal settlements in the city. I'm walking with a man nicknamed Dangote. People call him that because he once worked in a cement factory owned by Africa's richest man, Aliko Dangote. These days, he works as a water vendor. The ground feels soft beneath our feet.
It's a swamp, very, very deep. Very, very deep. They will fill it with refuse.
Orin Sumbare, like much of Lagos, is built upon reclaimed land. In this case, land means 12 feet of compacted trash. Dangote and I follow a thick bundle of pipes that tap into a main city water line outside of the slum. Each pipe belongs to a different water vendor. Dangote has painted his pipe blue. Because the water connections are considered illicit, Dangote's business is tenuous. The police often confiscate the generator he uses to draw the water to a distribution point outside of his house.
After they raid the whole machine, we go there and bribe them and take our machine back. Makes us feel tired.
Dangote is tired of paying bribes. He'd rather work above board, but the Water Corporation refuses to formally connect Orin Sumbare to the grid. In September, the government went so far as to establish a special water court to prosecute water vendors like him. After following Dangote's pipe for about a kilometer, we finally reach his house. Here, Dangote's wife, Mkeshi, sells water out of three large storage tanks.
What I have here is pump water. That's drinking water.
Most families here spend about $2 a week on water. That's about a tenth of the average household income. Mkeshi tells me about another problem, the nighttime water saboteurs. Occasionally, she wakes up to the sound of an overheating generator, a sign that someone has cut the pipe and is siphoning water.
And now they will just leave it there. They will not tie it back again. We have to go back again to go and trace it.
It's a big problem, but Mkeshi can't go out and patrol the pipes at night.
Once it's 12 o'clock, I can't go outside. This place is very dangerous. I can't go out because I'm a woman. So I can't go out that time.
The kind of insecurity Mkeshi describes underscores the degree to which people are on their own here. The police don't come around much, so residents have to protect themselves. I get to see how that works in the nearby community of Otumara, where a local vigilante group runs a neighborhood watch. They meet underneath a traffic-logged overpass that used to be notorious for violent carjackings. Prior Ohunion founded the group.
This bridge you see here, in the night, used to be a death trap. If you hold up here, you pray hard, because they can rob you at any time.
Every household volunteers a young man for the group. Patrick Agekamu became the chairman.
You know, we are the one who did the job before the police. We know the Bibles here. They live within us. We know that if a stranger came in now, we know him.
These days, each family in Otumara pays a monthly fee, about 75 cents per room in your house, to cover vigilante salaries, badges, and uniforms. But Patrick says it's not enough. They don't even have real weapons.
We only have cutlass. Let me show you an example.
Patrick pulls an ancient-looking machete from a chest.
You use this one to confront one to one with guns. It's funny.
The sense of insecurity in these communities is not just about crime. It's also the knowledge that the government can come at any time and wipe away your home.
They are coming with heavy armed policemen that look as if they are going for war.
This is housing activist Samuel Akinrolabu. When I first meet Samuel, he's at a gathering of the Slum and Informal Settlement Federation. It was September when I visited Lagos. In October, the government called for the demolition of all illegal waterfront settlements, claiming they are environmental hazards and sources of violent crime. Suddenly, more than 300,000 people were at risk of eviction. Samuel took to the streets. He sent me photos and videos of the protests he helped organize. You can see hundreds of slum dwellers blocking the gates outside the governor's office. Then, he sent me photos of freshly demolished small Karamo, a slum that had been home to an estimated 32,000 people. In the images, residents stand amidst the wreckage, salvaging pieces of wood from broken homes. It looks like the scene after a tornado. I call Samuel to find out more.
They came in with bulldozers. I will send you the videos. It was so pathetic. When I got there, I was almost crying.
He sounds heartbroken. He wants the world to know that he and his fellow slum dwellers are law-abiding people who don't deserve this. They want to be included in Lagos's new development plans, not shoved out of the city.
We pay our taxes. We are the engine of the economy. We are the ones that work. We are their drivers. We are their cook.
Samuel tells me he's afraid. The government is acting erratically, and what happened in Small Karamo could happen again, in another slum, without warning. Sure enough, just days later, Samuel writes again. The bulldozers reappeared, this time in the community of Ototo Gabame. Anonymous arsons had lit fire to dozens of homes in the middle of the night. Shortly afterwards, Samuel saw Lagos police arrive and assist in burning down the rest of the slum. Several residents drowned in the lagoon while attempting to escape. The government, however, denies any involvement in those fires. Here's Commissioner for Information Steve Ayarinde.
It has got nothing, absolutely nothing, to do with government.
But the commissioner does make clear that the government will crack down on what it calls illegal waterfront shanties. The waterfront, he says, is prime land. I ask where the displaced people are supposed to go. Steve Ayarinde's answer is essentially, back where they came from. He compares the displaced, who are Nigerian, to illegal migrant workers in Europe.
Government is not expected to look after everybody that has decided to migrate to Lagos and to settle illegally. If government says where you are is illegal, I think it's only fair to listen to government, which has a panoramic view.
That view doesn't seem so panoramic to Samuel, who knows that every time a slum is bulldozed, another one springs up somewhere else. We have to find a place to sleep, he tells me. For The World, Rupa Goganeni, Lagos.